Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey guys, welcome back to The Shift. We don't have Dez's sexy intro voice because he's on a plane, so I am introing the next episode for you. Before I do that though, I just want to say a huge thanks to Dez for the last episode. It was a beautiful tribute to his mother, and we're so lucky that he shared that with us, so thanks a million. She'd be so proud. And then this next episode is also not really about sex. It's more about dating. So that's kind of fun. We have a nice dating episode. And we actually went up to upstate New York the day after we got back from Ireland. So this is recorded a few weeks ago. And we met with Sarah Eckel. Sarah Eckel is an author of a book called It's Not You. And she also wrote for the New York Times in their series Modern Love. And she's wrote features for lots of other things. I found her through a feature she wrote about jealousy called Listening to Jealousy. It was really, really interesting. And so we discuss a lot about dating and staying single later in life, not settling, waiting until you meet someone who's compatible for you. And, you know, jealousy, the effects of it, how to handle it, how to communicate. And what else? Yeah, just relationship stuff in general. It was really interesting. I felt like I learned a lot. And she was great to let us come into her home and chat with us about this. So I'm really excited. I hope you guys like it. We have an email for feedback, contacttheshift@gmail.com. So please keep emailing us. I'm loving all your feedback. It's great. And keep DMing me. It's great. I love having the chats with you guys. So yeah, this is the episode. So Sarah Eckel, and I'll talk to you at the end of the episode. Thank you. Enjoy.
Thank you for having us in your home.
Thank you for coming. This is such a treat. This is so fun to do.
You live in such a lovely, quaint, like old fashioned, beautiful houses.
Yeah, it's what I think of, like America, not the New York that we live in, but it's like these little. I guess actually I don't see a lot of picket fences, but it's like that kind of picket fence.
There is one next door. They have
great.
A picket fence. Yeah. It's funny. This Kingston is an interesting city because right where we are, it does look like small town America, but it's actually a city of about 20,000, and you go a little bit further in and it's much more city. And then you go out this way and it's just like exurbs or very suburban. So, but like right this little sweet spot, it's very just.
Yeah, it feels like an old New England town.
Yeah. It's the first capital of New York State, Kingston.
Wow.
Before Albany.
Really?
Wow. Yeah,
so
it's cute.
Very old.
Bit of history.
Yeah, I like these places because it's like they're also homely, but I'm also like they're also like where serial killers are to me.
Like with all the movies where it's just like it's so true.
So Sarah, we were I guess Katie, in fairness, Katie was very motivated to chat to you.
Yeah. Well, I guess
sought
I
sought you out. Actually, in fairness, I thought it was a bold move. It's amazing that it worked out, you know?
I had said that I was surprised you had emailed back, but very happy.
Oh, really? Wow. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just because, you know, I wasn't too sure, but I guess I had found you first from reading your article or your feature on jealousy in Psychology Today. And I thought it was just, I sent it to all my friends. I sent it to Dez. We thought it was brilliant. And then I started reading up on your articles, and then you obviously have written a book called It's Not You. And yes. Yeah, so it's just, you thought it would be great for our podcast because you touch on a lot of modern dating themes. So.
Oh, thanks. That's kind of cool to hear that you found me through the jealousy piece, because usually it's through the New York Times Modern Love piece. That's usually like the first like way that people find out about me. So I'm just happy to know that piece has got some love too.
Yeah, you never know the internet. You never know what way the internet is going to throw you around, you know? But also as a 43-year-old single man, I feel like you covered a lot of topics that would be relevant to my life.
Cool.
Now, when you wrote the book originally, which was, I guess, would you say for a long time when you were writing in the New York Times and also for the book, you were single for a long time in your sort of so quote unquote later years to be single? Is that right?
Yes. I met Mark, my husband, when I was 39, and I had been single for pretty much, and not just not married, but really very like unattached from, say, 31 to 39. I think it had like little mini relationships, but really no one that I even called a boyfriend, like just dated, but you know, so it was like a really long time. And then prior to that, I had had a boyfriend for 3 years in my 20s, but then had a long period stretch of dry spell then. And I was really very obsessed with just like, what is wrong with me? Like, why can't I make this happen? I'm okay looking. I'm not the most beautiful person, but I'm not the worst. You know, it's like the whole thing was just like, and I wrote for women's magazines. I wrote for Self and Glamour and those kinds of magazines. And so writing for women's magazines is great because you get to say, you know, I just thought I might be able to do a story about, you know, there's a lot of women who are single and trying to figure out why. And, you know, you can like whatever your own issue is, you can then like pitch it to an editor. And then you get to call all these experts and you get to talk to like sort of like, so I would, you know, be unloading about my own stuff to these big time experts and just trying to sort it all out and trying to just, it was like I kind of treated myself like a big self-improvement project. It's just like, you know, like I'll be more confident. Like I'd write an article on how to be more confident and then I'd try it out, you know, and all these different things. And I just tried out all these different ways to kind of fix myself. And
but was it always in relation to dating, or was it also in relation to the big picture of being happy?
I wanted to be happy. Yeah, definitely I wanted to be happy and live my life. It was a kind of, but there was this thing of, you know, it's like that weird thing where people just like, you need to be happy in your life and you need to be happy alone so that you can find somebody. And it's almost like the being happy alone is like the prerequisite to being able to be in a couple. And it's just like, well, how does that work? You know, why would they be? Because there's lots of people who marry right out of high school and they're happily married and like they didn't have to learn to be happy alone. Yeah. So it's like, why do I? But so, yeah, I mean, it was definitely, you know, wanting to just be happy in my life and live my life. But there was always this nagging thing of, well, and if I make myself so great, then I'll find this person. And I would just get frustrated because people would just be falling in love and getting married all the time. And it's just like, they're not putting in nearly the kind of work that I'm doing. You know, I'm like one going to yoga and meditating. Like, I'm not doing all this stuff. Like, they're just like, I don't know. I just was out and he was there. And you know, now we have two kids. And so, and then I was also like really ashamed that I wanted a relationship so much, because that's another thing I talk about in the book, is like that also becomes evidence that you're not, that you're not ready for a relationship, is if you want it too much. And it's just like, well, yeah, I want it. But so that was also, so I was trying to, and it seemed like not feminist to want a boyfriend. It seemed really uncool. You have to kind of put on this, it's like, I'm not looking for a relationship. And so it was just all very confusing to me that I had these like desire for a relationship, but I also was kind of embarrassed by it. But then it's just like, well, getting married and being in a relationship is kind of normal. That's kind of the thing most people do.
Yes.
So that was kind of.
But surely that's a bit stifling, that much thinking about a thing.
I do, which is a thing I tend to do in general.
Analysis paralysis.
I like to really over it. Yeah, I really like to just go to town on anything like that. So, you know, at a certain point, and it was like a few years before I met Mark, I just realized I was like, oh, I don't know. I just realized this is all bullshit. Like, I'm fine. Like, I'm not the best, but like, I'm not, you know, like, but lots of people get married and they have all kinds of issues and I don't need to like become this perfect person to find a relationship. So that was very liberating. And then, yeah. And then I did, But it wasn't like the next day. It was like, because that's the other myth, you know. It's like you get you sort of like have this big moment, and then the next day there he is. But it was still like 3 more years before I actually met Mark. But
yeah. But it kind of happens there. It doesn't happen though, right? Like it.
Yeah.
Like it wouldn't. It wouldn't have mattered had you sorted yourself out or not. I mean, you may have met him anyway, right?
Exactly. Well, I think that he would have still. I feel confident enough, and you know, now we've been together for 13 years, so I feel like. You know, I think he would have liked me even without the yoga and all that. It's just like, he still would have liked me.
I love what you said there because I relate to that so hard, because I want love, have always wanted love. Okay, I want the whole thing. And my friends will constantly say to me, when you don't want it, it'll happen. But that's impossible. I'll always want it. What if I don't want it? And it frustrates me. So, and I mean, over the years, yeah. People have always said that to me.
Yeah, what kind of like, that is such a, that's how... To say that to somebody is just like, okay, so now I will stop wanting it. Like it's like telling you not to think of pink elephants. It's like then all you're going to do is think of pink elephants. You can't like not think about a thing or not want a thing.
Yeah.
Like it just kind of makes you feel even more doomed that you this is like, yeah, when you're not looking, the whole, like it always happens when you're not looking.
So when you were doing all this research and writing the articles and different things, what was the general consensus that life is better if you can find a partner?
You mean, oh, in the stories?
Just in just in general, was it, would, you know, you say you were talking to a lot of experts, and obviously you've had your own experience since. What was it generally accepted that actually your life will be better if you find somebody, or is that just something that we think?
I mean, I certainly felt it myself, but I think there was, it's almost like not, like no one would ever say that, especially not like the experts. It's always just like, this, you should be happy, you know, it's, you should be happy by yourself. You should be able to make yourself happy on your own, which is true and good. But looking back on it now, it makes life easier, like in a lot of ways. It can make things more complicated in certain ways. But I think part of it is just that you don't have to answer for yourself anymore. That was the thing I noticed, like about like being in a relationship or getting married. It's just like suddenly like nobody asks you, why did you get married? Like people ask you why you're single all the time. Nobody asks you why you got married. But like, you know, Mark and I, we don't have children. We're not religious. Our parents didn't pressure us. Like there's, you know, why did we get married? Like we could just still be living together. We didn't really have to get married. But nobody ever asked you that.
And nobody said, like, yeah, why did you get married? Yeah, like, why didn't you just live together?
What's the point? Yeah, like no one said that. So there's a way in which, like, so in that sense, but yeah, I think that I wouldn't say that people thought that, no, I wouldn't say that there was a consensus that it was better. It just was, but there were times when, when I would just get a little frustrated hearing from somebody who'd married in their 20s telling me, you should be happy with, you know, as a single person. It's just like, what do you know about it? Like, you know, like, you know. And so,
well, a lot of people with kids make that joke with you. It's like, trust me,
right?
The grass
right.
is greener.
And I totally get that having kids seems super hard to me. I mean, you know, the reason we don't have kids is just kind of, it was not a hard decision either way. We just, you know, we just don't have them. I didn't get pregnant, so we don't have kids. But it's not a problem. But yeah, it seems super hard for me. I kind of feel a little bit relieved that this didn't. We sort of tried, but you know,
you're kind of happy the way it worked out.
Yeah.
Plus, you have the excuse then to say, "Well, we tried."
Yeah, we tried.
Because people do. I think sometimes people can be quite shaming if you don't have kids, as if somehow that was a selfish act.
Yeah, exactly. And it's weird though. You still get the like, well, you probably didn't want them enough because like I didn't do any. You know, I didn't do anything medical. I didn't do, you know, and we don't, you know, we're aware that we could have adopted. Like, we're aware that that is a thing that people do. So there's still, you still get the, like, you didn't want them enough. But I don't know, for some reason, I think because I went through so much of the single thing and I kind of worked through that whole thing that, then I was like, yeah, whatever. I don't really care. That it doesn't bug me when, I mean, maybe it bugs me, but I don't take it very personally when people kind of say things like that because I'm just... I think having worked through the whole single thing and because the single thing was like I bought into it. And once I stopped buying into it myself, then I could kind of like then everybody was just kind of like a cranky old uncle at a wedding. You know, then everybody's like, yeah, whatever. But I had to kind of like not believe it myself for it to kind of, for other people's opinions to not really have that impact on me.
So if you had, just from that whole time of your life and all the thinking that you put on it, do you have like quick things that you would say to people that are maybe getting a little later in the game or starting to get frustrated? Do you have like a quick list of points for people of like, this will help you?
Well, I think the thing that was, it's funny, I was looking over just some of the things I was thinking about. One thing is that there's a sense of, I mean, the thing that I always was carrying around with me was what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me that I can't? And that was like the Modern Love that I wrote, the first one, that really resonated with people, like what's wrong with me? And but there may be, maybe it's actually that there's something right with you. Maybe you have just had the good sense to not get into the wrong relationship, because a lot of people marry and they, it doesn't work out. And the divorce rate is now actually lower than it used to be. The divorce rate has been declining actually since about 1980. And that's because people wait longer to get married. And
oh, wow.
People,
I did not suggest
yeah,
that.
And people are, and the more educated you are, the more likely you're to stay together. And the later you get married, the more likely you are to stay together. So being single and staying single for a longer amount of time, you're actually, you know, kind of fortifying the institution of marriage, because you're kind of you are being selective, and that's important. And you kind of, I think the main thing is just to trust your instincts, to just know that if you haven't married anybody yet, maybe that's just because you haven't met the right person and you've had the good sense to not marry them, and to not, and that you were not desperate because you didn't marry that person, because you realized, no, better to stay alone than to be in this thing that maybe is 80% right, but something's off, than to be in something because you're afraid to be alone, or because you get all that, you know, there's so much pressure to conform and to just to do what everybody else is doing. And so I think that that just kind of giving yourself the credit for understanding, for having that intuition that there's other things, there's other opportunities I had to get married. That was not right. That I should not have been that with that person. And we'd just either be in an unhappy marriage or we'd be divorced at this point.
Yeah. Well, I like what you said in one of the Modern Love pieces, that when meeting your husband later in life meant that you couldn't blame him for things.
Yeah.
And I think that's so true. Like, that's so important, because also you said that you couldn't blame him on how your career turned out, or
yeah,
so you kind of got to focus on that and then focus on. So I think that's a good point as well. Like, just like living your life. And because if you had met him younger and things didn't turn out in career wise, it's easy to blame each other. Or
it's like, oh, we had to move to Phoenix for your job. Or just also just, we're also really grateful for each other in a way that I just don't think I would have been if I had married at 25. I think that I just would have taken him for granted a lot more. And so there's just a really, you know, he had been married before, but it just wasn't, it was a marriage that didn't work out. And so now we're just like, wow, are you kidding me? I just get to hang out with you all the time. Yeah. This is great. You know,
he had no kids from a previous marriage?
He didn't have kids, no. He had a couple of pugs, a couple of dogs.
which is
really,
like kids in New York.
Yeah.
Except the great thing is that they only last about, there's a little less of a commitment.
Yeah. We miss the pugs. But
yeah,
it's the
pros and cons of the dogs.
Yeah.
That, they're so wonderful, but then it's a lot of loss.
It's a lot of loss, yeah.
My stepmom, she's only 15 years older than me, but she says to me that, like, I guess in Ireland, you know, she loves her kids and she's delighted she had a lot of kids. But there was always the expectation to get married and have kids. And she says to me now, like, just, you know, that's something you don't have. You can think about it, like, as a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really nice. And she said no one was saying that to her. Now, obviously, she's very happy to wear it, but it is.
Yeah.
I'm glad that I have that kind of voice as well, being like, okay, well, if you don't have kids, you can have a great quality of life. Like, it is hard having kids. Like, I see what my parents have to do, and I'm like, my dad's always like, it's okay being alone as well.
Yeah, it is really hard. And you know, I know that if we'd had kids, like, we would be like the same amount of happy. We would just be like, you know, there'd be all those stresses and hassles and all the things that we wouldn't be able to do, but then we'd also have the child and we would love the child. And so, but I feel like it seems like kind of even. It just,
yeah, well, either way would be fine. I mean, isn't that the way? It's like, you know, people end up not having kids and their life is fine, and they have kids and that's fine too. And, you know,
And I think that, I mean, there's a lot of interesting research that says that, and I might be partisan, that people who have children or people who don't have children are actually happier than people who have kids. And then the people who have kids are just like, no, that's all wrong, because you don't understand the sublime joy of being a parent, which is probably true. I know I don't know the sublime joy of being a parent, but I think it can be interesting how sometimes they can be almost these wars of like, who's happier? And it's just like, who cares? Like, yes. It's just like, we all just have our life, and nobody's life, no one's life is better than anybody else's, or choices are better than anybody else's. But it's interesting how it's easy to like dig into your camp. And
yes.
And I noticed that after the book came out, I was very often, I got kind of, there were a lot of like, there were all these kind of childless by choice kind of groups and or authors. And I was not really interested in like going to bat for being childless. I was just like, I don't have kids, but I don't really feel compelled to just be like, and it's so great because, you know, we can sleep in. I don't know.
But it is like, I just notice even on like Irish radio shows and stuff, it's a hot topic. Like if you're a radio host, you think, oh, this is great because this is going to light up the phones. The texts are going to come pouring in because it's kind of divisive and people are very much in their camps. I mean, I remember when my dad was dying, right? At that time, you could clearly see how important family was. It's all that mattered to him. And I was very broody after that time. Mm. So I do think that there are obviously certain things that you can never understand until you have children. But most of your life, you're not dying. It's actually only a short period of time.
Right.
It's a short period of time where you're just thinking, I need my family around me. The rest of the time, you're free.
So yeah.
I'll just get them to push the button on the morphine a little quicker. I mean, of course, I'm joking.
No, it's true. Someone like I was reading this somewhere, just like, aren't you afraid of dying alone? It's just like, well, you know, whatever, you're going to die, you know, maybe it'll just be, it's just how it happens is.
And Shaluk, you might end up
kind of bad anyway.
You could have a kid and them not talk to you, or anything can happen. It's like just being, just being happy no matter what. Like you said, you're happy the way you are. You would have been happy the way, but that there's the option. There shouldn't be pressure on. Yeah, I don't know if I want kids.
Yeah.
And then I have like a breakdown.
That is such an interesting subject about are you afraid of dying alone and all that. But the thing, it makes all these assumptions about perfect deaths. Like there's just so much stuff that we do not know.
Yeah.
So it would be quite silly to, you know, base your whole life around sort of these things that we can't control anyway.
Having this moment, right, to base your whole life on making sure there's that moment when you're on the bed and everybody's around you, when this could be like a million ways for it to happen. And so
my mother happened to be making tea when my father died. It's just very hard to be there at that moment. Not that I want to get hung up around no but hung up but just before we move on, I did want to ask, do you feel that the dating apps have sort of changed, you know, in that they weren't around at the time where you were thinking about all this? Do you think that they've changed it to a certain degree in terms of people getting older, getting panicky? Now they have a lot more options.
I don't know. I haven't done it in a while, but I was doing some coaching for a while with women, because women would read the book and then they would kind of want to talk to me. And so I was, and at first I just felt like, because I did online dating. I did Match.com and I think Nerve were the ones that were around. And so, and that was at a point when it was kind of still pretty new, and it was really embarrassing to just be like, you'd say like a guy I met on the internet and your married friends would be like,
oh yeah,
you know, it was like really, so it's still kind of just when it was starting to just not become embarrassing, but it was still a little embarrassed. But, and I was kind of, for me, it was just like, oh my God, I can actually like find somebody and we're going on a date and we both know that we're single and are looking, and it isn't like this thing where I'm at a party. I have to happen to just walk into the right party, and then oh no, I'm, you know, and then have to play this game about whether or not I'm looking. It's like, if you're on a match.com date, you're both looking. Yes. And so I kind of like that. And I like the fact that, like, oh, he's just a guy. He's just, I just wouldn't have met him otherwise. So I found it to be very, I didn't meet my husband online, and I never had anything online happen, turn into a relationship, but all the guys were really nice guys. Like, it wasn't a hookup thing at all. But, but I do hear from women that there's a lot more of the hookup thing. I don't know.
I found it hard because I don't like hooking up, and a lot of online dates were looking for hookups straight away. Mm-hmm. So that was stressful. But I actually talked, so Tinder's big in Ireland now, and I talked to my cousin when I went home, and she said most of her girlfriends have met their boyfriends from Tinder. And that's, I actually surprised me a little, because it wasn't around when I was there. But yeah, in New York City, it's definitely more of a hookup thing. My experience was.
But do people, because I know lots of people who are married to people they met online, like through, do people have, so in Ireland, your friends have met their boyfriends on Tinder, like around in the city in New York, are people meeting, having relationships based on Tinder?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's just, nowadays, like, why would you wait? Why would you wait to flag a cab when you can order an Uber? I mean, it's kind of the same with dating. Thing. Why am I going to sort of like hope to have a random experience when I can just pre-organize one and at least know that I'm meeting this person to see what they're like? But it's easier than walking up and saying, "Can I buy you a drink?"
But it can be a little soul destroying, because you can go on all of these and you can say before, I don't want to hook up, but sometimes you're actually opening the door for more weirdos to come to you. Hmm. Like, I mean, I had maybe one good experience with the online Tinder dating. Other than that, all of them were, like I said, I didn't want hookups, and they still were like, I'll change her mind on the night, you know, or very bizarre. And it just, oh, actually, that's not, then I moved to Hinge. Hinge was better. I met nicer people. But Hinge specifically says looking for relationship. So I think Hinge is good. And this is sponsored by
Is that the Facebook one? Is that the one that's kind of through Facebook?
Or? Yeah. No, I didn't link. You can do it without linking your Facebook. But yeah, it is. And it's very much like looking for, and then they ask questions you have to answer. So that people, so it's kind of like an easier OkCupid. OkCupid is a bit intense. But yeah.
I wonder if there's like a certain amount of, like, maybe Tinder, like you have to do a certain amount of labor in order for it to get, because Match.com, and that you had to fill out surveys and you had to do, and so I never went on a ton of dates, and I was picky about like when I went. So maybe the whole Tinder problem is that
it's more
so
random.
Fast that, but then you actually have to spend all that time actually meeting the person. Like, I was kind of picky about like, if I got to leave the house, I want to have read something that he's written, and I want to have like a pretty good sense of who this is, because leaving the house to finish.
But also you were a little older, so you probably weren't as open to the randomness. I mean, I think when you're in your 20s, you use the apps a little bit differently than you would when you're a little bit older.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's just on the person's face, which I think as well, then they come and their face doesn't look like their face. And then it's like, for me, it's all like smells and like how they present themselves. And like one Tinder date I had, the guy was very good looking. But when he came out, the way he presented himself isn't what I would consider attractive. So you're investing time in these hours. Like, I feel like when you meet someone in real life, you kind of already,
you get the vibe pretty fast.
But I'm very sociable, so I find it very, and I think that's rare. I think a lot of people are kind of nervous to talk to people on nights out, so it's easier for me to walk up to a person and then get murdered afterwards.
Hopefully not.
So I can see why people do like the online date. But yeah, Tinder is just a swipe and you're on the loo, you're swiping on the faces.
Yeah, that seems like, I just want, because I think, just because I'm sort of verbal, I liked to read their thing, their little bits, their little essays about themselves, and that I felt like I needed a spark of humor in there or something in there before I don't know. But I've also heard that Bumble is good because
the
Bumble,
woman has to talk first.
Yeah, I hate it.
Really?
Yeah, I hate it. I don't like talking first.
Okay. No, but I mean, I was
in
just,
real life I will, but not online.
Yeah, I mean, I was just wondering in this, would it perhaps take away some of the desperation for people as they get older? But I also wonder sometimes with the apps, does it make it harder for people to commit?
Yeah.
Because there's just so much options. It's just so easy to keep looking.
I don't know. I never, and and just being an older woman and being in my late 30s dating and having all my friends being in our late 30s dating, having too many options was not a problem for us. Like, yeah. it was just, I definitely, but it seems like for some people I could see that would be a thing or you would just, and there is something called the paradox of choice. This guy, Barry Schwartz, did research on this that, I mean, it was about jam and not people, but it was, he was like, people got to choose like a jam that they wanted and they had eight different kinds of jams, they didn't really like any of the jams, but if there were three, they would pick one jam, yes, and kind of decide,
yeah,
they liked it.
I always say, choices are misery.
No, completely. Yeah. Like when you go into a restaurant and the menu's too long, I'm like, I'm getting out of here. I can't make a decision.
So basically, yeah, that's what the apps have done. The apps have turned our lives into a big menu. So actually, maybe people are less likely to get into a relationship.
It's harder to be satisfied because if you're like, oh, I got this person, well, maybe there's someone better. So it's harder to settle, I guess.
But are people like, I mean, it seems like when are people leaving things that are pretty good because they think something would be better? It seems I mostly hear bad stories
in terms of bad dates.
Like in terms of, yeah, like what I mean, the women that I've talked to when I would do, you know, when I was going on the book tour and just talking to women, doing some coaching, I wasn't hearing women sort of saying, yeah, he was great, but maybe there's something better. It was usually, by the time they were ending it, it was a pretty good reason.
Well, I when I say that, and I'm going to generalize, I mean men, I think.
Yeah.
I think my perception.
I was just about to say, like, if your talk was for men, they'd probably say, well, it's great because you just keep finding other ones.
You just keep finding, you know, they're just getting an unlimited supply of women that they can have sex with quite quickly and then just move on and have sex. And yeah, it's like, well, I guess.
Yeah, that is just a sweeping generalization. It's not so much to say that they can have sex with them, but just in the sense that once they find a flaw, they think, oh.
Same thing. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, I think I think that does sound true.
And I do think women are kind of made for whatever reason to like accept flaws a little better. I feel like we'll date uglier men. We'll be like, oh, if they're a bit of a laugh, that's grand. I don't need their face. It's like, or little things. Like, I think there's more on women to be. And again, that might be us putting it on ourselves. I don't know.
I don't know either. But I think that's true. And I think that, I mean, women are definitely conditioned to, you know, be more forgiving. Yeah. But like, no one ever tells a man he's too picky. Or maybe they do. I don't know.
They definitely say you're too picky.
They do. Okay.
They've said that to me before.
Yeah.
But, it's very hard. You know, like, it's very hard. It's very easy to just throw out a thing of like people do this and that. But, you know, I think if a guy's in his 40s and he's not in a relationship, that people will say similar stuff like, you know, you're too picky or get it together.
Well, and you said I can't remember where you said it, but I remember thinking it was a really good point that you might not just be being too picky, you just might not have met the one. Like, that was really good as well. Because if you're finding fault, maybe they're just not for you as well. So I guess when you do meet the one and you're like, they're amazing.
I mean, there definitely exist in the world people who are, you know, overly picky. But I think that for the most part, it's just like you should be picky because it's the person you're going to spend the rest of your life with. Yeah, it's like if not picky about this, then what?
Yeah, I have to wake up every day by them.
Yeah.
I'm not going for ugly faces anymore. Yeah. That's what I've learned.
So can we just discuss jealousy a bit as a topic? Because, there's so many different aspects of it. I mean, in the piece in Psychology Today, I thought it was really interesting the way that you were sort of embracing aspects of jealousy as a positive thing in a relationship.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that the researchers that I interviewed said is that, you know, if you don't experience any jealousy in your relationship, then maybe that means you're just not into the person that you're with, that a little bit of jealousy can kind of be a nice charge. Like, it just reminds you, like, oh yeah, this person I'm with is great and I am not the only person who notices, so I should not take them for granted. And you know, when you so people engage in, they call it mate guarding behaviors, where you go over the party and you kind of put your arm around your partner.
Yes.
Or you befriend like the coworker, you know, it's just like, hey, you know, I'm Sarah, like, that's a great sweater you're wearing. It's just so
oh, you're actually just like making sure that your competitor is in line.
Yeah, making sure that she's in line. And then also I think maybe if she is, if you kind of become friendly with her, then maybe that would guard against her trying to steal your spouse if you're
oh yeah,
you know, no, I'd do that 100%. I'd be a cute little secretary. I'll be her best friend. that's a great tactic.
Yeah, it's a good one. Yeah, those are some of the work. But yeah, I think that if you don't get a little bit concerned when. And I don't think it has much to do with trust. It's just like it can be, I think as long as you are in kind of a basically trusting relationship, when you feel that little like surge of panic or something, I think it's just a signal that you recognize that your partner is, you know, a very attractive person in the world, mm-hmm. and that you're not the only one who would necessarily notice that.
So. And should you, in that scenario, should you say to your partner like, hey, you know, I was a little bit jealous when you were talking to that guy or should it just be something that you acknowledge in yourself that you're feeling it?
I think it depends. I think it really depends on if you really feel like if the behavior is really bothering you and you feel like maybe they were being kind of inconsiderate, then I think you should say something. If you're saying, you know, like you were really talking to her for a long time and it seemed, you know, I think that as long as it's kind of presented as just like it kind of made me feel jealous or it made me feel a little insecure when you did that. And then hopefully your partner will say, oh, I'm so sorry. I'll dial it back or whatever. But of course, there's nothing, you know, there. Yeah. They divided it up into, there's the kind of the natural, just healthy jealousy of just recognizing your partner as maybe other people would notice your partner. But they did divide it up into kind of like, sometimes there was one woman that I interviewed who was just like, anytime the waitress was cute, you know, or anybody's just like, did you like her? Did you want her to date her? And like, she was super paranoid. So she realized that she needed to kind of work on herself because it was a pattern that she had with all of her relationships. Whereas there was another guy who got very jealous when he saw his wife at a barbecue talking to this coworker, and he got very jealous. And she said, you're crazy. There's nothing going on there. And that was true. There was nothing going on there, but she was having an affair with somebody else. So he had like, there was like kind of an alarm system.
Some sort of intuition that something was going on.
Yeah.
I guess there must be a difference between natural jealousy and I guess what one would call toxic jealousy, where it sort of takes over your life in the sense that mm-hmm. you're always thinking that something's going on when it's not, right?
Right. I think it's really just a matter of, is this, are you responding to an actual event that, or a real thing that is happening with your partner where your partner is kind of looking around? Is that, or is it just coming from within you? And that can be pretty hard to sort out. But I think that that's why I think it's very useful to talk about it with your partner. And if there's nothing to, if they are devoted to you and if they aren't planning to cheat, then that should be a fine, you know, that should be a fine discussion. One of the therapists said, you know, it's really just a matter, it's kind of on a couple per couple basis where there was this one couple where, there were two men and one was got very jealous when the other one was very flirtatious and they just kind of drew the boundaries of like when it was okay for him to flirt with others and when it was not. But their boundary might have been like, he might have been given more latitude than
some other couple.
Yeah. Another mm-hmm. couple.
So. And can I ask, is it acceptable to say to your partner, or this is just a personal opinion thing, you know, if you say to your partner, listen, you know, obviously I don't want you to be with anybody else, but if by chance something happens, don't tell me. Because once you tell me, I'll be jealous. Whereas if I don't know, I won't mind.
That's interesting. I don't know. I didn't.
You've never sort of thought about that?
I mean, I guess I've thought about that question, like in my own relationship, like would if my husband had an affair, would I want to know? And I don't know the answer to that. Mm. Like, I really, I guess if it, yeah, I mean, I kind of concede that that point of like, if it was some random one-time thing,
if it was
maybe
a silly, if there was a sort of an element of lack of premeditation or sometimes
yeah, like
things
maybe
just
better
happen.
Not to know. But I mean, I can't say I've thought about it a lot, but I don't know. It's just like, it's a really hard one. What, I don't know. What is your take on that? What
well,
would you feel?
It's a tough one because, well, the joke, well, jokingly in this conversation, I would say, was I haven't had this conversation really in a serious relationship. I've had it more sort of like just talking about the subject. But the joke I say, which I guess is partially based on truth, is if some random occurrence happened and then they came to you and they said, listen, this happened and I just need to let you know because, you know, I feel like I need to be honest with you. My immediate reaction would be, oh, so you couldn't deal with the guilt? So now you're telling me? Mm-hmm. So to alleviate yourself yeah. from the guilt, the amount of secrets I've kept from you, I held on to all. I held on to all of them, yeah. you know? I ate that guilt to keep us together, whereas
yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
just... But that's kind of semi-joking. But obviously that says a little bit about me in terms of sometimes I feel like it's better to just keep the secret rather than bring up the turmoil. For example, I'll give a less dramatic example. You've met your... You ended up hanging out with your ex-girlfriend or you were having lunch with a woman from work and you just said, you know what? I'm just not going to tell my girlfriend or my wife just because I don't want to bring up those feelings
yeah,
in her.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, is it more caring or is it actually dishonest to just say, I'd rather just not bring up the emotions?
I think it's that's a fine thing to do to not like if you know it's going to just make her feel bad and insecure and if there's truly nothing going on then it seems like yeah why I mean if I would like if she says we're you know what did you do yesterday or what'd you have for lunch like if it, as long as it doesn't involve like actually
well,
being deceitful
yeah but that's the problem is sometimes you end up lying.
Yeah, that's
like I just went for a salad on my own and then the back of your mind like you are lying.
But then you see if they end up finding out about it, like, you know, the neighbor saw you over with Joanne.
Yeah.
Then it seems like, yeah, like you're covering something, even though you're maybe not. So it's risky.
Yeah, that's a risk.
There's a word for this that I just read recently. What's it called? It's called micro cheating, which, I read an article about it. I don't know much about it, but that, they talked about it in this podcast called, it's now called The Waves. It used to be called Double X, which is... So you're it talked about like texting an ex, but you give them a different name on your phone.
Oh yeah, that's just good deceit technique.
See, that's pretty deceitful. Yeah, that seems like not okay. Like that seems like not, you know, but like, yeah, I think just if you, if you're having lunch with an ex-girlfriend, I don't know. I think it's more about like, There is a line between like just not bringing it up versus
when you're straight
up
lying,
like trying, you know, like you know, then it is.
But then you have that weird. So just to take it a little further, then you have that weird scenario. So say you're in a relationship where the other person is just very paranoid, like you said that, you know,
yeah,
like
yeah, yeah.
Say you're with a woman or the male equivalent who just constantly is sort of like, where were you? You know, always just needs to know.
Yeah.
I guess you partially feel like you're better off just lying because you don't want that world of pain, you know?
It's hard though, but then if you get caught in the lie, then
yeah,
her
then
paranoia is all the more
justified. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, I think that with someone like that, it's like I think it would be about really trying to figure out, is it just that this person is really paranoid or, you know, is there anything...
Or are you driving her?
Yeah,
yeah,
is there anything you can do to make them feel more secure? Because for some people... they just really are that paranoid. And that then some people, sometimes it could just be, you know, some people just need more reassurance than other people. And I think Mark and I are lucky in that we're both insecure. We're both just like, do you still love me? Are you sure? Like but like, which I think if we were with more secure people, it might be kind of annoying. Like, yeah, I told you that just, you know, but
yeah,
we're both kind of insecure. So we.
Okay. Another jealousy scenario. I'm sorry for just throwing these
ahead.
Scenarios at you. Is it okay is it okay to just deliberately elicit jealousy in your partner for your own sense of making sure that they're still into you? Or is that a negative behavior?
Ah, that's a good one. I mean, it's certainly something that I with previous like guys I was with or boyfriends, I'd certainly found myself doing, I don't know that it ever worked, but I remember, yeah, but I feel like I was doing that with men when I felt like they were not fully that into me or on board with me.
So you needed to see if they got jealous?
Yeah, or just like it wasn't even like that. It was more just me, like kind of this attempt to be like, see how lucky you are, see what a hot commodity I am. And I don't think it ever worked. I don't know. I
associate it with sort of like maybe like a naivety or an immaturity in your sort of development. But at the same time, it's not a technique I've ever used. But I don't like to. That's my personal judgment on it. It may actually be, you know, a thing that works for some people. You know,
I think the reason that I was doing it with these other, you know, did it in these other relationships was that it just was not that good in a relationship. I almost feel like if you're compelled to do that, maybe there's something about the relationship itself that's not quite right. Yeah, that because the person should make you feel secure, and if they're not, then there needs to be a conversation about that, or like what's behind that, because it just seems like, you know, you shouldn't, especially when you get older, because that seems like, you know, I mean, there is it is kind of a funny balance about, you know, there's the whole, you know, being in that. I think there's an idea that like if you're too secure, then you're going to get complacent. And the whole jealousy thing is just that kind of like exciting flare of like, oh yeah, that's right. You know, I could lose them. Like, yes. You know, but I almost feel like that it can only really be pleasurable. It can only be a kind of a pleasurable thing if you have a basic kind of baseline security in the relationship. If you're already like really worried and kind of paranoid, then it's not going to be pleasant. It's just going to be anxiety producing. Yeah. So, it strikes me that if you're compelled to do that, that there's a deeper problem in the relationship maybe that needs to be addressed.
Yeah. Plus it pushes people away. Like I've had an ex who was just so insecure that he would try to make me jealous with other women, but I would, to annoy him, I would not show any jealousy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
I'm like, this is like, and I would just be like, oh yeah, that's fine. You stayed over in her house and you stayed in her bed. I don't care. Because in, you know, that's not how I show my affection, and it would really irritate me. We definitely shouldn't have been together. So,
but it is annoying when people do that.
Oh. Yeah.
Jealousy is one thing. Being jealous is one thing. But if you feel like you're aware that somebody's doing it deliberately, it is kind of annoying.
It's annoying, and I realize like you're in like this adversarial relationship with your partner that you should be on each other's side, and that
yes.
And that I think so often relationships are kind of put in those terms of like you're the winner, you're the loser. So it's like, no, you either both win or you both lose. There's no this idea that you're in a competition for like who is less into the other one or who loves one another, the other person a little more or a little less. That just seems like right there, that's just not a relationship that's going to really work, because the person, you should just both be on each other's side and both be supportive. And because you're together, so if one person, like, there's no like winner or loser. You both have to be happy together and calm. And I mean, it's sort of like a relationship is kind of be a refuge, I think, as opposed to something where you're trying to out, you know, be.
You yeah, know, it should be like
yeah, competition.
Yeah, you know, the safe space as opposed to the place of upheaval.
Yeah, why knock them down when you can build them up? Like anytime, like a partner of mine, a best friend of mine is a guy, and a lot of partners will be very jealous of him, but I'll very quickly try to be like, the reason why we're best friends is because I'm not, and he's not attracted to me. So, but like, I guess the other side, I could be like, oh yeah, look at me and such, but like, why do that? Why even put someone through that? Like, I try to make it very clear at the start, but I could see how I could use it to make a partner jealous, but that just seems so mean.
It seems like it might like work in a short term way, like maybe like it would get somebody who's already trying to. It's kind of like breaking up with somebody who's about to break up with you, and suddenly they're like, suddenly you're interesting again. Yeah. Or, but that only works a little. That doesn't really work long term. Mm-hmm. Like it seems like they just that. Whereas just kind of like having a relationship with just like mutual kindness, and you know, then you keep getting it back. Like if there's just kind of that kind of like pettiness with each other, or that kind of just like withholding, then that's what you're going to keep getting back. Whereas if there's mm-hmm. like a generosity in the relationship, it just kind of, I think, yeah, there's.
It can be hard though when that, sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it can be hard to fight that though when that energy begins to build up.
Mm-hmm.
You
yeah.
can find yourself in it before you even realize it.
Sure.
You know, and the point scoring.
And I think that even then, like it's so, if you say like, you know what, like, oh, I'm really sorry. You know, I was actually trying to make you jealous at the party because I was feeling insecure. Then that would actually like make a person feel good. Maybe it's just like, oh, okay. You know, like that, because I think that's another thing is just being able to just see yourself when you're maybe not being your best self. And then if you can call yourself out on it or like hear it when someone else says it, then that can also make it easier. But it's hard to do. Yeah, it's all very hard to do.
I think that's really a good point, because even just if you say it out loud, you hear it and you're like, oh god, that was so silly. You hear the words and you're like, okay, now I can kind of, and it's like a relief. Yeah. No.
Okay, my last question on jealousy. Well, I think it's my last question on jealousy. Is it acceptable to check your partner's stuff, as in phone, computer? And obviously if you find something, you think, well, at least I know, but was it cool to check in the first place?
I mean, this is just my non-expert opinion.
Yeah, well,
By the way, you're talking
to two comedians that are doing a sex podcast. Like there's no experts on this podcast. This is an expert-free zone.
And I don't even have a lot of sex, and I'm hosting a sex podcast.
Yeah, so you're absolutely fine. Put out your own personal opinion.
My own personal opinion is that there should be trust, and that yeah, there's something like kind of not okay about it. About, mm-hmm. you know, but I've never personally been in the situation where I was worried. So maybe if I was ever worried, would I check? I don't know. But because then where does it? So you know what? It just seems like a slippery slope. So you're just like, all right, you know, let me just check to look at his phone to see.
Let me just make sure.
And then there's not, and then you don't find anything there. But then you're just like, oh, maybe the email. Like you just like it just seems like it'd be like eating potato chips or something.
Oh,
you just
yeah.
keep going. You just be like, once you gave yourself that permission, then it would. Yeah. I don't know. Like it seemed like it would just kind of snowball.
Plus,
there.
You can read the messages wrong. Like I'm just thinking now, if any partner were to go through my phone, and you know, a lot of my guy friends back home will always reach out, being like, "Oh, love you. Hope you're getting on well over there." But they could totally read into
yeah,
that completely.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, yeah, purely platonic. So you're getting it from a different, oh yeah, it's risky business. I don't read it. Even when their phone flashes up, I look away. Like, I don't even want to know.
And I think that, you know, if you're in a couple, you need to have your own, I mean,
yes.
your private space. Mm-hmm. And there should just be like a baseline trust, and hopefully neither party violates it. But there just needs to be your own private space that you, your private conversations, your private
yes.
thoughts. I don't think you yeah. have to share everything.
Totally,
I think that,
yeah.
that you just need to know for yourself that you're being honorable and kind of, you know, trust
yeah.
them. But if so, yeah, I don't like the.
I know. I mean, I'm of the opinion that people going through your stuff is a major violation. But at
yeah.
the same time, like people have gone through people's stuff and discovered something. And, you know, I guess in a court of law, you'd say, well, this is not permissible because you had no right to be in it. But then they know.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Yeah. Well, but if nothing's going on, you're just hurting yourself. It's like cutting yourself going in and like, you know, it's like little sort of self-harm. Like that caused a whole thing that didn't need to be.
Right.
Ugh. And I do think as well, like I always try to think if I'm seeing someone, well, look, if they're going to cheat, they're going to cheat and I might not ever find out about it, so I might as well just enjoy what I'm enjoying. Or you know, I might, but there's no point worrying about something that hasn't bloody
yeah,
happened.
Yeah. And it just like people just need to have their own you just need to be able to have your private space and your private conversations with your friends and not feel like, because that's just not going to be I just think it would be very hard to be happy in a relationship with just knowing that someone was always like monitoring everything, that just doesn't seem like healthy at all.
Yeah, and I guess you'd have to talk to like a psychologist about what drives these, like this like sort of over jealous behavior. You know, what's behind it? Where do the insecurities come from? I'm sure it gets quite complicated after a while because some people seem to be really burdened by it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and some people were cheated on before and I guess they take that into the next relationship or whatever. So there's certain things.
Any number of things that might drive someone to think that. Because personally for me, I obviously I was joking with you earlier about that. I tell them to just don't tell me. But I mean, obviously I get jealous, but I hate jealousy. So I hate if somebody tries to bring it up in me deliberately. Mm-hmm. But I always do, you know, I am of the opinion that like if you're meeting your ex-boyfriend for lunch, I guess I'd rather just not know. But they say, but you're going to make me lie to you. And I go, yeah, well, this is.
Yeah, now I just like thought of that. Like, yeah, what if my husband had. Yeah, I guess if my husband had lunch with his ex-wife, I would want to know that.
You would want to know, right?
Yeah, I would want to know that.
Yeah,
I mean, it would just be weird. It would just be. Also, she lives in Oregon and it would just be so weird. Let's not bring up.
Well,
but.
Yeah. Well, if they bring it up, then it's like shows that maybe it didn't really mean anything. As yeah. Well. So that is the thing as well.
I mean, the thing about an ex, though, is that they're an ex.
Yeah.
Like they're not like I find exes less worrisome than like sort of just somebody that some new person is just like, who's that? Like, you know, like an ex is like they've already been through it all. Like they're done. But
I used to have a joke. I don't do it anymore, but because it was about my ex-boyfriend, he would be jealous of all my exes. And I'm like, don't be jealous of my exes. Be jealous of all the guys I haven't fucked. Like they're more potentials. I got rid of these fuckers.
Yeah.
Like,
I wasn't happy with this guy. All right. I'm sorry I grilled you so much on jealousy.
No, it's very interesting. These are questions I hadn't thought about.
I won't talk about it too much, but I grew up in a very jealous home. My mother was very jealous of my father and she would do things when we would be driving in the car. She would be like, you're looking at that person across the road. And so it was very it was hard for her because whatever that issue is embedded in her. It was very hard for him because. So what if he's looking at it? Even if he was looking at a girl.
Right,
and it was
just
so toxic and. I saw a lot of that growing up, so I'm very, you know, I can't stand jealousy to it. And I'll try to, if I see my partner, I'll try to be like, no, I'm not doing anything, or try to, because I just see how toxic, how dangerous it can be.
Yeah. I think it's also like on people to also just make sure that they're making their partner feel secure so that the jealousy doesn't happen, so that or that it is kind of, they even if the jealousy happens, there's a sense of just like, okay, I know this person is not, you know, not looking around. It's like you said that the you know, because people can get kind of enjoy making a partner jealous, but then, and if that's what's going on, then you know, it's not always on the jealous person. It's not always just that the jealous person is being so irrational and terrible.
Yes.
It's just, I think it's also a responsibility. And if you are with somebody who is a little more sensitive, I think it is also like, okay, I choose to be with this person who is particularly sensitive, so maybe I need to do a little extra work to keep them assured, and so I think it's a balance of both.
And just communicating, I think that's so true, because it's funny, like my most recent person said just something about this, a lot of guys get jealous.
Your most recent person?
Yeah, I say most recent person. They actually said that to me. They go, I heard you called me your most recent. But made a good point about, like, so my best friend is a guy, and he just kind of said, like, you know, and just make sure you keep certain stuff with us private. You know, I see how much you share. And I was like, oh yeah, that actually is good. Sometimes I probably can over. And then, you know, it's important to know. And that can, so that, I guess, not that he was being jealous, but he was stopping it before it ever happened and setting those boundaries. So just communication is so important.
Yeah.
It's just hard. It's hard. Yeah.
Katie, do we have anything left from our list before we?
Oh, yes. Oh, sorry. That was going to be loud. Chemistry. I read your advice to a 49-year-old German man, and he said about how women kept saying when he went on dates with them that they don't feel the chemistry, and you gave him really good advice, and I just thought it was a great advice for everybody about how that he probably just wasn't really being himself and too focused on how to be on the date.
I think the chemistry thing is such an X factor. It's just that, you know, it just, who knows why why we are attracted to some people, not to other people, why, you know, and why vice versa. And, you know, and it can be, I mean, I've certainly been in situations where I was just thought I was on a date and so it's like, we really hit it off. Wow. That was really happening. And then not according to the other person. So, you know, I definitely understand that frustration. I think my advice to him was to not worry so much about what impression he was making on them and instead just focus on, just having a nice date. And I think that sometimes we get so focused on just like impressing people and looking really cool. And that it ends up having the opposite effect where you just kind of sound self-absorbed and full of yourself, as opposed to if you are more focused on the other person and just like asking them how their day was and how things are going for them. They still might not might not be chemistry. That's not like a guarantee of chemistry, but I feel like when I get into that mode of just like relaxing and just being like a thoughtful, nice person on a date, I'm just enjoying it more. And that seems to work a lot better than trying to just like make a good impression by showing the person how fabulous you are. It's just like instead of selling yourself, being yourself, you know, just sort of like, you know, the selling yourself thing, I think is.
Yeah. I mean, I've definitely felt that I've gone on some dates in New York and you can feel it when a person is like, has like kind of like a date routine.
Yeah.
It's almost off-putting.
Yeah.
But I think maybe everybody goes through a little phase where they're just doing a little bit too much dating. Mm-hmm. So it can become a bit, it could become a bit like a ritual of, I'll ask him this, this, and this, and then I'll make my decision. And if there's no chemistry, then you're just stuck there.
Yeah.
You know, it's quite painful just being on a date and just being like, oh, God.
It can be, yeah.
When is this going to end?
Yeah. What excuse am I going to use now to get out of this?
Yeah.
Bigger
than
usual. But that's why doing comedy is great. We can always have a show we have to run to.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because they're late night. I've used that as well. I've been like, oh, I just got booked. Got to go.
No, I've never. I always see it through to the end.
Yeah.
You know, I definitely, despite the fact that I can be cold, at times, for some reason, I just cannot shut down a date.
I walked out 15 minutes after a date.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. Well, no, 15 minutes since we got into the bar and sat at the... And I didn't even finish my glass of wine. But we had met maybe a 10-minute walk before that. And I had said, firstly, he didn't look anything like his bloody online profile. Mm. And then he was just... His vibe was weird. But I said, when are we going to this bar? It was nice and quiet. And we could kind of talk and get to know each other. And he was like, I don't like the vibe. And he brought me to some really loud place. And I couldn't hear him. And he was annoying me. So I just said, look, I'm sorry. This isn't for me. I'm not feeling the connection. And he was like, what? And then I just said, have a nice night. And I left.
I think that's great though, Katie.
Yeah.
I think more people should feel free to do that.
Yeah. Especially if he was kind of like a pain and like took you to this kind of awful place.
Somewhere like where 16, now I know 16 year olds can't go drink, but that's what the vibe was like. It was so loud and I had just done a show. I wanted to relax and I was like, ugh.
You must have been so liberated. I mean, the feeling when it's finally over, the feeling when a bad date is over, it is like the most amazing. It's like I've literally been in restaurants sitting there just going like, I like obsessing about how great it's going to feel to just be like in my car on my own
and that's
checking my Instagram or something, just like back to my own life.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine the freedom you must have felt to bring that on earlier.
Oh, yeah. I went out to my girlfriends, had a drink with them.
That's a call. That's a call to our listeners. Have the courage to just walk.
Yeah. And then as well, just when you were saying something as well about, I had it, he was sweating. And afterwards he was like, I was just so worried about making a good impression. And I was like, well, actually you're making a bad impression by not.
And
I had tried to relax him. I put my hand on his arm and. But yeah, it's a pity because if he was just so in his head, he actually kind of ruined it for himself.
Oh, that's...
I find that I can't deal with.
Yeah,
I find that quite unattractive.
Yeah. No, it is. It's that whole like, that's the tragedy of trying to make a good impression is that it doesn't. It's like working so hard to like make people think well of you. There was another a woman I wrote who writes about self-esteem, and she said that people who like. It's like it's kind of this contradiction that the harder you work on trying to make other people have a positive impression of you, the like it just backfires.
That's what my step. I've quoted my stepmom a lot. Actually, she is so great. She said to me, "I used to always try to please everybody," and then she said, "Look, just suit yourself, and everybody else will suit around." And ever since I started doing that, like my life got much easier, and I got better friends, and dated better men. And I think there is something to be said about stop trying worrying what other people are thinking. and just, yeah, kind of.
If anybody's looking for a quick synopsis of just like the bad date vibes, I don't know, has anyone watched, have either of you tried to watch that series Dirty John?
No.
Well, there's also a podcast. It comes from a podcast, a true story about, you know, like a scam relationship guy. I'm not giving away any spoilers, but literally one of the first scenes is a quick sort of montage of all her bad dates before she meets this guy. And they're really good because even though they're all based on sort of like men talking to her, so obviously it's all just like bad man dates.
Right.
It is a good, for anyone out there listening and for you guys also, it'll take you back to the horror of just listening to people like selling themselves. And
oh, and it could be just, yeah, it could really put you off the whole date. I went on a date with a guy in his 40s and I thought, oh, this would be great, he'll be so mature. And the first question he asked me was, what celebrity do you masturbate to?
What?
Really?
I swear to God. And then this is what probably trained me to get out of dates after 15 minutes. Like this was a while back, so I was still Irishy, and I felt I had to be very polite and stay there. I even kissed him before I left because I felt like I'd kiss him and he won't feel too bad about the date, and then I just never talked to him again, which is ridiculous. I shouldn't have even kissed him. But yeah,
I just want to put it out there that kissing weirdos is not a specifically Irish thing.
But I mean, I feel like an Irish girl will kiss even if we're not interested, just to be nice.
Just to be nice. So I think I've actually heard quite a lot of women say that you sort of do it out of sort of a sense of not wanting to let the guy down.
Yeah, but I've learned myself
like
out of that
whole like going for the cheek thing. like the kiss goodnight and you like.
Yeah.
Oh, you do the side swipe. Yeah, they're going in for the kiss, and then you go for the cheek. It's like, damn, she gave me the cheek.
Do you know what the other thing? Yeah, this guy was such a weirdo. He asked me, "Tell me something your parents don't know." And it's like, I just met you. Why would I tell you?
He's clearly a weirdo.
Wow. Oh yeah, I know. Oh, anyway. Oh,
but anyway, it doesn't matter. But yes. Just out of curiosity, what was the answer to the question?
I said, "Why would I tell you anything I haven't told my parents?"
No, not
masturbation.
Which celebrity?
You know what?
I'm kidding. I don't need to know.
I'm going to answer. I had never masturbated to a celebrity until he said that, and then I thought, "Oh, maybe I should." So, who's the guy from High School Musical? Zac Efron. That's my guy.
Oh, that's funny. He's the one I mentioned. But anyway, sorry. We're getting into the silly zone, which is totally fine. Kind of an obligation to our listeners.
Yeah.
But great. Thank you so much. It's an hour and 6 minutes we've been chatting.
Oh, fun. It went by so fast.
Yeah, this is so much fun. I'm so happy we did this.
Thank you so much for your time and for inviting us into your
house. Yeah.
Thank you for coming. And
oh, by the way, do you have anything still to plug?
Yeah, well, I would like to plug my book, which I think if somebody liked this podcast, that would be the thing that they would probably like, which is It's Not You, 27 Wrong Reasons You're Single. And it's, I go through all of the terrible things people say to single people and why that's bullshit. So
it's great.
Make sure to buy that. Currently, we're the number 3 Irish podcast.
Oh, so wow. That's not amazing.
It's not a bad plug.
Wow, yeah. That's amazing.
Are you a social media person?
I am. I'm at sarahechol.com, though most of what I tweet about is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez these days.
Oh, is that right?
Obsessed with her. And then I have a Facebook. Yeah, but sarahechol.com, you can kind of, is sort of where my articles are and my book links. And that's, you can get the link to everything at my website. Yeah.
Yeah, the psychology or the jealousy, is on that as well. Yeah.
Yeah, that's on that site.
If we chat again, we'll chat about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Who is that?
Love her.
What?
I don't know anybody.
Well, we'll discuss it after. I'm going to hang up the phone here, and then we'll discuss AOC. Thank you.
Okay, I'm back. Hello. I hope you guys enjoyed that. I thought she was great. So interesting. What an amazing and lovely woman. So thank you, Sarah. That was brilliant. And guys, don't hesitate on messaging us any feedback. We'd love it. I love all the feedback I'm getting so far. So yeah, DM us at Katie Boyle Comic or at Des Bishop, or email, we have this email called contacttheshift@gmail.com. So please, I've already gotten a bit of feedback, which is great, but any more feedback on the topic we put out last time, you know, on kind of game playing. So like, you know, when you're like courting somebody or even in relationships, this kind of playing it cool, do you play it cool or do you play games or... Do you are you just open and honest? Do you prefer when someone's a bit more nonchalant or playing hard to get or the chase? Any of that sort of stuff. Yeah, let us know so we can do we'd like to do an episode on that, so we'd love to get some feedback and opinions. And thanks for everything already. You guys have been amazing. So yeah, keep it coming. And yeah, so that's really it. And have a lovely day. And we'll talk to you soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.